My guest today, Dr. Munzi Sliman, is a director of Think Tank's Monitor and founder of the Center for American and Arab Studies. Dr. Sliman is also a founding member of the National Council of Arab Americans and vice chair of its National Board for Political Affairs. He is an independent media consultant with more than 25 years of experience in Middle East diplomacy and media relations, and a frequent commentator and guest analyst on radio and television broadcast. Dr. Sliman recently returned to the U.S. after spending time with a protest in Cairo's Tahrir Square. Welcome, Munzi Sliman, to Takes on the World.
Thank you very much. Just one slight correction.
Yes.
I left Egypt prior, unfortunately. I left. I had to leave Egypt before the uprising started, but I spent about a week in Egypt prior to.
I presume you wish you had been there.
Yes, indeed.
I know you've been closely following the protest in Cairo and elsewhere in Egypt, and if President Mubarak and his new Vice President Omar Suleiman, and for that matter President Obama, had hoped the protesters would get tired and go home, it seems they have greatly miscalculated. How do you see it after this? What's been going on, including what's happening this morning?
Well, the uprising really exceeded all expectations, including probably the uprisers themselves. And it seems the attempt by what remains of the government, because the government does not have legitimacy, Mubarak or Omar Suleiman or the prime minister, they are from the old regime that the people already changed, but they just have not moved from power officially, but in the eyes of the people, in the eyes of the world, they already done. So their attempt now is to move into a technical issues related how the transformation or the reforms could be implemented, and at the same time try to manipulate the media, the public opinion about the difficulties of the people could be facing in their daily life, in addition to maneuver the military to exercise some sort of pressure on the uprisers to try to quell the uprising. I think it's going to be all attempts in vain. It seems to me the momentum is regained and regained again and again by the uprising, and it seems that they will not really stop until Mubarak is out and until a new interim government that accepted by the protesters is in place.
Well, I know the Suleiman had called a meeting, invited a number of people involved with the protests, including the Muslim Brotherhood, to a meeting in which he then made an announcement after which totally went against what had happened in the meeting. He gave a very positive report, and the people who participated said this simply wasn't true. He seems to be an intelligent person, if not quite an angel. But can he actually believe? Has he been so isolated from reality? Do you think he can get away with this?
The problem with the figures of the regime that they have been, for the past 30 years, used to the tactics of manipulation and public relation in order to get their way. And they really still live in the past. They cannot understand and comprehend the magnitude of what's happening. I think this is truly, up to now, it is intifada, it is uprising, but it's promising to be a truly a genuine revolution, not only for Egypt, but probably as a model for modern time about how the will of the people can be exercised in a peaceful and in a mass, a democratic, peaceful movement. So I think he still live in the past, thinking that they could outmaneuver, they could use some tactics, whether, like he's threatening now, maybe you could have the military, as if the military, which is actually is a reserve power for the regime up to now, it's not really completely neutral. Maybe the ordinary soldiers are sympathizers with the protesters, but the elite in the military and the security, they are all benefiting from the regime. The regime was able to bribe them with the bribe actually received from United States government for a role that Egypt has been playing to secure the state of Israel and also to secure a regime that will continue forever to be a guardian for the occupation in Palestine. So it seems to me that he soon probably going to realize that all the tricks, they're not going to work, and probably, maybe, in my opinion, there is probably many potential situation here. I still hope that some junior officers in the military will realize that they have to step in and they have to declare from the beginning that they are siding with the protesters and that they are only playing a role of being guaranteeing that this uprising go peacefully to achieve a declared goal and try to supervise the transition or help in the transition and help in forming a government. Interim government has nothing to do with the former regime. As a matter of fact, that this is a possibility, although it's still up to now, it's a wishful thinking probably from me, but it seems the only organized force now that able to exercise power beside the people is the military, and probably that's one of the possibility that could exist.
Well, you raise an interesting point because since it is a conscript army, there could wonder how much or confidence that Suleiman and the generals around him, including Mubarak, have that there will not be a major break within the army. Because if the army remains loyal to the regime, at some point they're going to be ordered to crack down on the protest.
Well, like I mentioned, it seems to me that they were able through the years with the network of connection that they had with United States military, political, security official, and with $1.3 billion goes for the military aid, they were able really to get most, if not all, the officers to be on the payroll and to be loyal to the regime. And that's why we didn't see up to now any clear defiance for the regime. But I think those officers, they're no longer going to be in control if the people continue with this mass protest that exceeds sometimes millions in one day. And so I think eventually either some of them going to crack, I'm talking about the military elite, or a junior officer would kind of try to look back to 1952 and when Nasser and his colleagues attempted the coup at that time and transform Egypt. Nobody is looking to have a military dictatorship, whether it's a nationalistic or not. They're looking to have the military to play only a transitional role. And I think, I don't think Omar Suleiman, who's from the military, of course, but he was with the military intelligence more than day-to-day management of the military. So you have, I think, the chief of staff and some other leaders, probably, they're the one who could have more direct control. Of course, now being the vice president, appointed vice president, has some authority. But as long as Mubarak, you know, in power, so I don't think he can exercise that power over the military. So it's still open question for the military what kind of role they may have to play in the near future.
Now, the Egyptian military, at least the high-ranking officers, obviously a number of junior officers, have had a close relationship with the U.S. military over the years. But what is your feeling about if those officers of what their feeling is about Egypt playing such a subordinate role to Israel, that having to literally be Israel's puppet in maintaining the siege of Gaza, and actually without Egypt there could not be a siege of Gaza. Do you think this is a potential breaking point for the army in the fact that they will free themselves from being supported to Israel? And actually, what impact do you think what's happening will have on the Palestine-Israel conflict?
Well, I think I don't put too much stake on the military elite. They have been, nurtured, and they have been bribed, and I don't think the nationalistic tendency or feelings is really playing an important role here. It seems to me the security of the regime and their own well-being, because they really been living happily after, and they are really living in a higher standard than the others, and they've been loyal, and they've been in connection, like you suggested. It seems to me the connection is not limited to one individual or two. It seems to me through training, through visits, United States has cultivated the entire military elite almost. I'm talking about, brigadier, general, and up. But the remaining military, I'm talking about junior officers who were not corrupted by the regime, and the regular army, I'm sure they're feeling exactly what you described. One underlying of this uprising, and people probably cannot comprehend this in the West, one of the slogans is, it's true that freedom, dignity, humanity, underlying dignity. Under the dignity is not only the personal dignity, it's also the national dignity. And they feel that Egypt, as a leader, traditional leader in the Arab world, and maybe on the world stage, when Nasser was the leader of Egypt, that Arab national, pan-Arab stand that Egypt has lost by having Sadat and having Mubarak after Camp David agreement, by being subservient to Israel interest, to United States interest, they feel that the dignity and the national dignity is gone. So it seems to me, in addition to their economic demand and the freedom demand, there is also a national dignity has been lost, and they want to retain it. And of course, any kind of change of the role of this regime is going to reflect negatively on Israel, and at the same time going to reflect positively on the Palestinian, and then we will not see the siege on the Palestinian. We will not see this crime against humanity continue, and then the military in Egypt and the civilian and all the leadership is just allowing this to happen, and because it seems to me under the guise that we have an agreement, international agreement, and we have to secure the peace. It seems to me the peace, anybody who, sometimes worried about the peace process. The peace process is the secret code of what you can call it, the security of Israel. Any attempt to have the so-called peace is in the narrative of the Israeli interest, in the narrative of Israeli security.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's significant that Mahmoud Abbas, who is the person who signed away the Oslo Agreement, joined Prime Minister Netanyahu in sending his support to Mubarak when the protests were out in the streets. So it is a charade, which is something I talk about on the program here. Getting back into the build up for what is most extraordinary. I'm 76 years old, and I have never seen anything like this in my lifetime, and even what happened in Iran does not match this because there was a lot of manipulation going on in Iran. This has been building up for some time. There have been a number of labor actions over the last couple of years. And, of course, we have to look at the role of technology. Al Jazeera and also the internet. Maybe you could talk about how all these have played into building this up.
Well, it seems to me the new mass communication, high-tech communication, social networking played a major role in the organization. And there were many groups, particularly two, three groups, they organized over special events. One of the events is was that Khalid Said, that he was attacked and killed by the government, and in a very blatant attack, and that created a movement because the brutality of the regime was clearly after detain him, and they he was killed under torture. So that worker, who was also an educated person, created a protest. At the same time, some of the places that, and since then, they start organizing over this issue. At the same time, other places, on April 6, they had another demonstration supporting the workers. So there were many networking around some events, and the movement in the Arab world or the third world start usually in universities, while now it's starting on a virtual society that created on the internet, on the cyberspace. It seems to me that society is very effective. That virtual society was in place, but nobody was able to see the power that this has. So even the guy who was detained from Google, who was in UAE, but he was an Egyptian, and he came just a few days before the uprising, because he was kind of the high-tech guy that helping with the network and arranging for some of the calls that came on Facebook and others to call for the 25th. And the significance of 25th, it's very significant why they selected 25th. It was a holiday for, supposedly for, I think, the anniversary for the security forces.
So Police Day it was called, yes.
Yes, Police Day. So they picked that day just to prove that the brutality, or to expose the brutality of the police against the people. So, but nobody, the government, and anybody thought that this kind of tsunami of people going to be coming into the street and doing this, like you mentioned early, the issue of Iranian revolution. This is by far, I think, going to be the most significant event probably in the past 100 years or so.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've watched scenes on Al Jazeera, and I'm kind of a Luddite myself, although I have a Facebook page, but I don't do much with it.
Yeah, I want to add one thing about Al Jazeera, especially Al Jazeera. Now, what you have here, you have a workshop on revolutionary change by the people. It's an open workshop, live, for the people to see, for the people to learn, for the people to look into it. This quick communication made that virtual society of uprisers and uprising made it just reality. It just made it more connected, instantly connected, and gave it the momentum. So I think, yes, I think the role of the media, by just transferring the reality, was also a very important factor in cementing in bringing more confidence to the people, and it's also playing more important role in the continuation of this, because people now think of Maidan al-Tahrir, you know, Tahrir Square or Liberation Square, that where they are gathering now. It's like an iconic symbol for change, not only for the Egyptian, for others. And I think I can imagine now that many families want to bring their children. They come just to take a picture there, to be there, to witness history, to participate in it, to take a piece of what this transforming event.
Well, this is what is so exciting. Is watching late last night, I watched Al Jazeera on my computer, is seeing new people who had not shown up at all to the protest. And you say bringing families, small children, this is an historic moment for the whole world, but certainly for Egypt and the Arab world. And it is obviously frightened the heads of state, the autocrats that the United States has been supporting, because now we see headlines that the United States is being criticized on both sides. The United States is being criticized because it has thrown Mubarak under the bus, or at least tried to, what they say. And all these autocrats are supposed to now feel betrayed by the United States and worry about America's word. On the other hand, the United States is not giving support to the people in the streets. And this is a typical Obama moment, I should say. Its whole presidency has been pretty much like this. But I don't think any U.S. president and what the U.S. represents would probably act any differently. They're caught in between with what the U.S. says the U.S. stands for, which is democracy, and what it actually stands for is global hegemony. And how do you see this playing out in other countries around the region?
Well, I think nobody thought. I told you I was in Egypt just a couple days before it did start, and believe me, there was no signs, no signals. And I think I'm a little bit cultured person. I can sense things coming. Believe me, there was no sense. Even a taxi who sympathizer with the Tunisian uprising, I asked him, and after knowing that he's positive about it, well, how about Egypt? So he told me, I tried to translate, he told me, in Arabic, he told me, الحكومة علمت الناس على الجبن, in Arabic. The government taught the people how to be coward.
Huh.
Now he's indirectly saying that, I wish that we're not coward. And in the underlying in his answer, in his observation, is that the horror of the security forces and how their iron fist on the people, that they subdued the people to the extreme that we are cowards. And he's saying, we became cowards. Well, cowards, in 2 days, you turn from a coward to the most courageous people on earth. I mean, it's amazing if you see some of the footage of how the people were fighting the brutality of the security forces in many instances. So I think this is contagious. This now, many leaders in the Arab world and probably throughout the world, all dictatorship, are trembling now, are afraid. They have heartburns and more than heartburns. And they are, I think, like I said, this workshop in progress, in open air, live, for people to give them courage, to break all the barriers, to break all the fears, I think this is it's going to impact. The most important impact is on the Arab-Israeli issue, I think, in the Arab world, because if Egypt only turned to be a neutral country, not to be a country that, for justice, for the Palestinian, it would be sufficient to make the criminal Israeli government and leadership trembling also and looking in fear about their fate. So I think many other places in the Arab world, in the Third World, many governments now, they are really looking how they could stop this tsunami from happening, how they can stop it. I think there is no way. And, of course, the success of this uprising in Egypt going to have enormous impact on the speed and the scope of change that may occur throughout the Arab world. I think there is many places, no matter how the governments, they're going to attempt to stop the will of the people from being exercised. I think we're going to see, I see, you know, Jordan, they attempted to change the government. You see, in Yemen, there is a movement by Ali Abdullah Saleh to try to smooth things with the opposition. We didn't hear anything now about Morocco. Morocco, I think, you know, probably should be the next one in line, in my opinion, more even than Algeria, because of the economic situation and because of the role of Morocco, also traditional role of serving the masters in Washington, in Western Europe, etc. And also for their unique also role in the Arab-Israeli issue, role against the Palestinians. So I think many countries that their candidate, and I don't think even the Gulf states are out of danger, if you want to say the danger, out of this, the impact, because even in some countries like Saudi Arabia, like Bahrain, there is a high degree of unemployment despite the enormous wealth that they have. And there is also, under the guise of fighting terrorism or fighting radical Muslim, they are also suppressing the people and torturing and killing. So I don't think anybody is immune. As long any leadership that ignoring the will of the people must think twice about how to advance to their future. The reforms cannot be cosmetic just under the pressure of the West, because so they could give them a good grade and continue to play servant for the interest of the empire and the empire builder for domination of the people. They need to look after their people, and they need to give them the freedom to and allow for the building of institution. If any government is not going to implement serious reforms, I think they are in danger of having what happened to Ben Ali and what's happening to Mubarak now.
Well, when you say when the people have lost their fear, the government is now afraid.
That's true.
This is that was really an eloquent description of the situation, in which I wanted our listeners to hear.
I want to add
more
thing,
yes,
if you allow me, about the duplicity of corporate media in the West.
Go ahead, yes.
I mean, it is just amazing to me. I mean, it just it's a shame that this genuine uprising in Egypt and even in Tunisia before that did not get the attention and the analysis and the admiration that need to take, especially from the people who have the slogan for freedom and for democracy. It seems to me if only you are accepted to be free and to be democratic if you don't touch the Zionist American alliance. It seems to me as long as you don't touch it, And this is, you know, amazing to me how, for instance, the reaction of the West during the last election in Iran, which is, by the way, I'm not defending the regime there, but there is no way on earth you could have 8 million fraudulent votes for that election. I'm sure there was discrepancy, there was deficiency, there was in that regime. I wish that some of the other regime in the Gulf, for instance, who criticize Iran, would implement at least election like they do. I mean, they have no election. So I think it's amazing that how this corporate media been exposed. And I think if you look to history, I think what's happening in Egypt and Tunisia, despite being on the map of the earth, smaller country, but I think the decline of this empire of domination in the world and for the system that existed now, that ruling, the five permanent at the UN and all the world system as we know, I think this is more than putting a hole in that system. It seems to me it is a sign of the imminent collapse of that system of domination and degradation, and this is racist against people of the South in general, and against all people, and against even the people in the North. This world system is being not only challenged now, it's being put into test, and probably it's in the final stage of its domination.
Mabruk. My sentiments exactly. I know you have to leave in a couple of minutes. I want to thank you, Munzer Sliman, for being our guest today on Takes on the World and giving us a riveting analysis of one of the most extraordinary events in modern history. And certainly, I guess we would call it the Arab Awakening, but the whole world is watching now.
Absolutely, absolutely. The will of the people is going to be victorious at the end. And thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for your listeners.
Thank you. It was our pleasure. Take care.